Welcome to Women Worth Knowing, the radio program and podcast hosted by Cheryl Broderson and Robin Jones-Gunn.
Beautiful listeners, Cheryl and I are really excited to be with you today because whenever Cheryl finds a new woman that she starts researching, I get these little text messages, ooh, I found a good one. And I get so excited to come back in studio and just let her tell us the story. So today I am right there with you, listeners. I'm an avid audience ready to hear. Go, Cheryl, go.
Okay. So, Robin, you know Psalm 136, and that's a psalm that says his mercy endures forever. And it talks about, you know, hard circumstances, and yet his mercy endures forever. Good circumstances, his mercy endures forever. Mm-hmm. And that's what, you know, Israel is to repeat this refrain. Well, when we come to today's woman, her name is Elizabeth Newman, and she was born in 1855. But the overall kind of theme of her life is undaunted. She's just undaunted. She's not moved.
Great word.
She's
yes.
not shaken. In fact, the story written about her was called Elizabeth Undaunted.
Really?
And she's known as Elizabeth Newman of Kashmir. Now, I stumbled upon these little booklets years ago when I lived in England. They are called Eagle Books, and they were written to inspire children. And they were written, they started writing them sometime around the turn of the century and kept writing them until the 1960s. And then the whole publishing, which was called Friendship Press, was taken over by the World Council of Churches. So it's not the same as it was. No, mm-hmm. not even. But if you can get your hands on one of these Eagle Books from way back when, they are the best. And I remember,
treasures.
Yes, they were 25 pence. And I was at this bookshop in England, and it's called Book Aid. It's a Christian bookshop, mm-hmm. and they just yeah. collect all these old books. And I bought every single one they had. And I paid 25 pence per little booklet and just bought out. And so then every time I'm in England, I check used bookstores for these little Eagle yeah. books just to see what I can find. And that has been a wealth of information and women worth knowing. And I was thinking, I tried to look up Elizabeth Newman of Kashmir in online and all these different websites, even going to Kashmir, India, and the hospitals there and kind of the history in Kashmir, the medical history. And there's just honorable mentions. There's nothing mm. concrete. There's not the story. And I think it's so wonderful how these Eagle Books saw these people that we wouldn't know otherwise. They would never have been recorded in history and said, do you know what? This is a woman worth knowing.
Yes.
And Elizabeth is such a woman worth knowing. So as we go through the circumstances of her life, you are going to want to say, oh my goodness, undaunted, undaunted, just like his mercy endures forever,
yes.
over and over again. And so the beginning of her life was, it looked really promising. Her parents lived in a place called Tunbridge Wells, which is about, I don't know, maybe 40, 50 miles southeast of London. It was a really cute little village. Her father owned a shop in the village and would ride his horse to work and, you know, back every day. And Elizabeth, because they were well off, had the privilege of being educated, which was not a norm in the 1860s for women, but yeah. she was being educated. Yeah. And so she had learned to read. She had learned to write. She loved education. In fact, at times she even went to a school with other children, and she just enjoyed learning with other children. And then one day when she was 13 years old, some men came to the door, and her mom was too busy to get to the door. So she asked Elizabeth to answer it. And when Elizabeth went to the door, she saw her father's limp form in a carriage
oh.
and found out that he had been thrown from his horse on the way home from work. And that's why he was late getting home. And he was now an invalid. He couldn't walk. He was paralyzed. There was very little he could do. And he continued to live. The nurse came by in the beginning because everyone hoped that he would get better. The doctor kept checking on him, the nurse. And week after week, when he wasn't getting better, and the family was getting more and more impoverished because the father couldn't work, Elizabeth's mom asked Elizabeth to start taking care of her father and to learn and train under the nurse that was his caretaker so that she could take over and learn how to take care of her father. So at 13 years old, Elizabeth had to halt her education to take care of her father full time. She had little brothers at the time, and the mom was just overly occupied trying to take care of the house, whereas they had had like a cook and a kitchen staff and, you know, servants. They couldn't afford any of that. So it was Elizabeth, her younger brothers, and her father, mother, and she had to be the nurse. But the doctor would come once a week and check on her father's progress and on his health. And he wasn't improving. But this doctor was so impressed with Elizabeth that she had a little joyful spirit, that even though it was hard for her to step back and not finish her education because she loved learning, absolutely loved learning, she continued with joy and efficiency to take care of her father. And one day the doctor said to Elizabeth, "Elizabeth, you really need to train to be a nurse. I've never, ever worked with anyone as efficient and as responsible as you. And considering your age, this is just remarkable." And he said to Elizabeth, "If you ever decide to be a nurse, I will give you a recommendation for the most prestigious hospital in London." And she thanked him profusely, but thought, that will never happen. For 7 years, she continued to take care of her father day in and day out. So she was doing the bathing, the cleaning of the room, his feeding. All of that was her responsibility. There'd be visitations by the mother, maybe by the brothers. But Elizabeth had the brunt of the work taking care of her father, and she never complained. Never complained. Because she also said that she felt if she complained, it would only make her mother's work so much harder. And it would only complicate the situation, make everyone feel bad. But if she could keep her spirits up, then she could keep the spirits up of her father and the whole household. And I'm thinking this young teenage girl realizes that she's an influence on her whole household and her home. When she was 20 years old, her father passed away. And Elizabeth was now free of that burden. So she said to her mom, "I'd really like to go to London. I'd really like to study nursing." And her mother was just like, "Absolutely no.
Don't leave me now."
That's right. The brothers were old enough to help bring in an income, and one of them had taken over the shop. So financially, it was all right. But the mother was so worried about Elizabeth going to London.
Sure.
And Elizabeth, by this time, had become her companion. You know, most of the siblings were now leaving or getting married and moving out of the house. And Elizabeth was still there. And the mother was just like, "What am I going to do without you? And London is such a dangerous place." Because consider, this is the 1800s. London was not a safe place for a single woman.
No.
Especially a single Christian woman. But in the end, Elizabeth prevailed by her kindness and her sweetness.
Convinced her mom.
And so she moved to London. And so she took a job at the homeopathic hospital in Great Ormond Street under the recommendation of the doctor who had
I have actually
seen her.
Walked past that hospital and took a picture because, if I'm correct, there's a little statue of Peter Pan out in front on the Ormond Street Hospital. It's the same one.
That's incredible.
Isn't that peculiar?
I mean, how many hospitals would there be
on Ormond Street?
Great Ormond Street, right?
I need to look that up. It could have been Lesser Ormond Street. I don't know.
Isn't that fun?
Yeah.
So she was...
Wow.
Maybe not for Elizabeth, but for you, it was fun.
Yes.
But she was what was called a probationer. So a probationer, what an old-fashioned word, isn't it? Probationer. So that was somebody who studied and trained. They did both.
Whereas it sounds like it's in like criminal.
They studied, they trained, and they worked. So her first year, she was in charge of like cleaning bedpans and cleaning hospital floors and making sure all the tools of the doctors were sanitized. So she just did the grunt work. And at the same time, she had to study books and go to classes at night to learn nursing. Well, Elizabeth was really concerned because she felt like her writing was not up to par because having halted her education at 13, she felt like her grammar was subpar and that her spelling was subpar. And so her writing ability, she felt that they lacked because she really didn't get a chance to write or to write papers or do any of those things that an educated teenager did in the 1800s. So she felt
behind.
Behind, yeah. Exactly. And so
but certainly not with the nursing skills.
Not with the skills,
all
right.
The training she'd had.
Mm-hmm. But what was interesting is after 3 years, and each year, so she starts out as a probationary. The next year, then she moves on to patients, and she's taking care of patients, and she's cleaning patients, and she's interacting with patients. And then the third year, it's more training that she's working alongside other nurses and doctors in the actual care of patients. And so after 3 years, she took all her written exams, and she scored at the top of her class.
All right, Elizabeth. Undaunted.
You love that. Yes, exactly. Undaunted. So already we see that she was undaunted by the thwarting of her education, by those hard years of taking care of an mm-hmm. invalid father. She was undaunted. She was undaunted by her lack of writing skills and the hardships of living in London and having to study at night and having to work hard all during the day. So after that, for 3 years, Elizabeth worked as a nurse. Then when she was 26 years old, Elizabeth was appointed the nurse in charge and the matron of a brand new hospital in Hastings. And this was a women's hospital. And believe it or not, it's still there. But the building is still there. Yeah. And it looks like a house. It's Buchanan Hospital at St. Leonard's on the Sea. And it was mainly a maternity hospital. It was strictly for women. But this was a very prestigious position. And again, she was in charge of all the nurses at only 26 years old. Now, there was a missionary doctor, Dr. Fanny Butler, who had heard about Elizabeth. Isn't that interesting? So Dr. Butler had served in Kashmir, India, and had served the women and had been really taken with the plight of women in India. You know, it's interesting how many doctors we have talked about, female doctors, on this program.
Yes.
Who felt called to India to yes. minister to the Hindu and Muslim women because the men would keep them from getting the medical help they needed yeah. because men were not allowed to see their wives. I mean, it was just a shame and a humiliation, and it just wasn't done. So they would rather let their wives die and even their little children and babies than allow them to see a doctor, especially a man, a male doctor. And so you have so many of the women that we've talked about on this program that went to England, went from England to India. But when you consider that India is larger than the United States, you think about how vast that need was for doctors, especially female doctors.
Yeah.
And so Dr. Butler begins to talk to Elizabeth and just painting a picture of Kashmir, the land of India. But she painted kind of a romantic picture of Kashmir. Oh, it's, you know, this beautiful valley with these high peaks surrounding it and, you know, rivers and lakes. And she didn't really talk about the hardships of living there, but she did talk about the plight of the women there. Look, these are Hindu and these are Muslim women and they're young and they're dying every day because nobody cares. Nobody's there to attend them. And so Elizabeth said, well, I'll pray about it. And so she began to pray about it. And the more she prayed, the more she felt the burden of these women just coming on her. And she fell in love with these women sight unseen and really wanted to go and help them. But at the same time, she told her mother and her family, and her mother said, absolutely not. Again, her mother.
Once again.
And she protested. And she even accused Elizabeth of being heartless for wanting to go on the mission field. I mean, that's a low blow when it's your mother saying something like this. And you're going because you're feeling, your heart is feeling the plight of these women.
Yeah.
But Elizabeth's mother is like, no, you're supposed to stay here and take care of me. What am I supposed to do?
Right.
But in the end, the Lord prevailed and Elizabeth's mother agreed to let her go. And in 1888, Elizabeth, at the age of 33, accompanied Dr. Butler to Kashmir, India. So the trip was long, and it began with a voyage to Bombay, a long voyage to Bombay, and they did not sail first class or second class.
I would not imagine so.
And the ship was crowded and busy, and it was rough seas all the way. Then once they hit Bombay, there was a crowded 3-day train ride where Elizabeth took in all the sights and sounds and the appalling smells of India. She said her senses had never been so assaulted in all her life as when she was in Bombay and on this train. So the way of the train was that it was loud. It was crowded. With lots of sweaty people. And not only that, she said they would stop at all these different stations. Whenever they would stop, there'd be a huge throng that would all rush the train to try to get on to see who could actually make it on the train. That's how packed the train was. If you got a seat, it was amazing. But there are people standing all around you, in front of you. And not only that, when they would rush the train, the carriage of the train would begin to shake back and forth as people were trying to get on. Then they would rush in. Everyone would squeeze together even tighter. They said if they put the windows down on the train, soot would fly in from the engine of the train and just blacken your face, and you know your whole body would just be gritty with the soot. And if you close the window, the stuffiness and smells were unbearable. And I forgot to mention this. Not only were the people crowding in on the train, but they were bringing their livestock with them on the train.
Oh, my.
So there were chickens and goats and, you know, other livestock on the train with these people, as well as, you know, their bags and their wares and everything on this train ride. And the train ride was 3 days. 3 days in those conditions. And, you know, 3 days, you know, trying to get to the toilets. I mean, can you imagine how miserable for 3 days? And Elizabeth decided that she was going to focus on the beautiful scenery outside and take inventory of the different types of people on the train.
Oh, my.
Elizabeth Undaunted.
Elizabeth Undaunted.
Exactly.
Wow.
So they
I don't think I could have done that.
No, I don't either. But they finally got to their stop, and Elizabeth got out with Dr. Butler, and there was now a 200-mile journey over mountainous, treacherous peaks on narrow trails, and they were going on a 2-wheeled cart pulled by a horse. They had to stop 6 times in that 200 miles just to change horses because of how treacherous the terrain was. And they would stop along the way to spend the night at various rest houses with, you know, all sorts of people that they had never known before. And they brought their own bedroll, and they would just unroll it in the middle of these rest houses and sleep for the night, then be awakened in the morning and have to get on that 2-wheel cart and continue over these treacherous peaks and down. Finally, they reached a place called Barmula, which is the gateway into the Kashmir Valley. But they were not done, because now they had a 40-mile trek up a river. And all the boats on the river were family boats.
Incredible.
So the family would not only live on the boat that was, it was made out of mainly mats, but they would live on this barge. It was more like a barge. And there'd be a little hut at the back of the boat where the family, the children, lived. And on the boat would be the family's livestock, their chicken, their goat, their maybe their donkey also, whatever animals they owned were also on the boat. And the children would be the ones that were the powering the boat. They were the power for the boat.
Oarsmen.
Yes.
Oars kids.
They were either paddling or they had these long poles that they would put in the water to help propel the boat forward. So that was a 40-mile journey. And again, it took 2 nights to get there, 2 days, 2 nights to get to the city of Srinagar. And Srinagar, it was where they were going to live. So Elizabeth gets to Srinagar, and it seemed to her, the way she described the houses, it was like a, have you ever made houses out of a deck of cards? You know how precarious they are, right?
Yes.
And you know how precarious they are. She said it looked like houses that were stacked up like a deck of cards, and they all leaned on each other. And the refuse, the backyard was just their refuse pile.
Oh, dear.
It was not a backyard. You know, we think of a backyard or a back garden as a place where you go and enjoy nature and you sit and you relax. Not for them.
Mm.
That was where all the refuse went.
Mm.
All the casts off, all the rotten food, everything that they didn't want in their house was in their backyard. And not only that, there was one main street in Srinagar, and the main street was also used for sewage. So all the sewage was brought out, poured out on that main street.
Oh.
And she was saying that there was no sanitation at all in Srinagar. And cows wandered about, just roamed on the streets, eating whatever they wanted, doing whatever they wanted, because they were considered sacred by the Hindus.
Mm-hmm.
Not so much by the Muslims, but definitely by the Hindus. And so they were allowed free rain in Srinagar, just going wherever they wanted, peeking into windows. And if you know cows, they are very curious animals. They'll stare at people and they'll come up like, hey, what are you doing? My parents once had a house in Hawaii, and I remember the dining room was all glass, and right across, like 6 feet away, was a field of cows. And these cows would line up every day just to watch my parents and what was going on in the house. Very curious, curious animals. And gray donkeys were just tethered to every house. And they would, you know, look longingly at the donkeys. So Dr. Butler directed Elizabeth to a typical Kashmir house that would serve as their home and their dispensary, which was like a tiny hospital.
Well, just try to imagine. I mean, Undaunted is starting to make a lot more sense. Because this journey alone and the things that she was exposed to and getting the feel for what India was all about. And then they get to their destination and there's no sanitary, anything.
No plumbing.
And she's supposed to carry out medical procedures and treatments. And I just keep thinking of Dr. Butler, who had the vision to go there in the first place. This is another woman we need to talk about someday.
Yes.
That there was the opportunity for her to get all the way back to England and to know that this is someone I can bring.
Exactly. That when she was in England, she heard about Elizabeth.
God
she said,
"Do that. This only is... God can do that, and prepare Elizabeth's soul to go on such a journey." Okay, go on.
And you have no idea what she persevered through.
Mm.
But anyway, so at this house, which was a typical Kashmir house, there were no glass windows, no windows to close, but rather intricate lattice laced across open frames, letting air in and very little light, but also allowing for bugs to come in, too.
Sure.
No screens. And the floors and the walls were made of pressed mud that had been smoothed out, and the floors were covered with mats made from reeds. And Elizabeth actually had her own tiny mud room in this Kashmir house. At this time, there was no mission hospital in town, but the Hindu and Muslim women – oh, sorry – there was a mission hospital. So missionaries were there. There was a hospital. Dr. Butler would work at that hospital sometimes. But the Hindu and Muslim women were forbidden by their families from going there. So even though there was a hospital, even though Dr. Butler worked at that hospital and she was a female doctor, the Hindu and Muslim women were not allowed to go there.
Mm.
Not only that, but the women of Kashmir were very suspicious of Dr. Butler and Elizabeth Newman. You know, rumors were flying because it was scandalous for women to live alone, you know, not live with families, but to live alone, much less walk the streets unchaperoned. And so no women would come to the little house for help. And so Dr. Butler then suggested that she and Elizabeth go house to house in the village looking for patients. So at first, when they would go to the house and make a house call, the women would hide and even recoil from them. They were scared like they were white witches. And finally, there was one woman who was so desperate because her baby was so ill that she entrusted the baby to Dr. Butler and Elizabeth. And when the doctor was made better, and so was the mother, then other women hearing that story began to come. But that's just getting Elizabeth to Kashmir. There is so much more. And you're going to say undaunted, undaunted, undaunted. So that's just part one. But part two, wait. Just wait.
I can't wait.
It's going to be so good.
For listening to Women Worth Knowing with Cheryl Broderson and Robin Jones Gunn. For more information on Cheryl, visit CherylBroderson.com or follow her on Instagram or Facebook. For more information on Robin, visit RobinGunn.com or follow her on Instagram or Facebook. Join us each week for a lively conversation as we explore the lives of well-known and not so well-known historical and contemporary Christian women. We hope you've enjoyed today's episode. Make sure you rate us on your podcast app, subscribe, and share it with a friend. Thank you again for listening to Women Worth Knowing with Cheryl Broderson and Robin Jones Gunn.